RadioInfluence.com.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Landry Football Podcast for this Thursday, January 16th. Another week has gone by. We have put the college football season to bed. We're down to conference championship weekend in the NFL. So lots to talk to about. It got questions, a couple of questions to answer that will remind you. If you've got a question that you want me to address, go to LandryFootball.com. Hit contact Chris, and I'll be able to address it for you. Just go ahead and send me a question, and if you want me to answer on this podcast or wherever, we'll be happy to do so. So we put the season to bed, and I have been asked since Monday night, being at the game, how do you rank this LSU team? How do you rank this offense? How do you rank this season? And the answer is, in always a dangerous situation with recency bias, you always have to be careful. I go back and try to remember and think about what was back several years, how I felt about the team, kind of document it, and went back and looked at some notes. There were some, you know, the difficulty of putting in perspective is we can look at great offenses back 20, 30, 40 years, and you have great wishbone offenses and running offenses. And so you've got different styles. You're looking at results. You're looking at numbers. Well, numbers are going to be different in today's game because today's game is different. But I can say that without question, there has never been a singular season in college football where I was more impressed by an offense. I can say that I have never been more impressed in a single season in college football by a quarterback that played to the level that Joe Burrow did. Unbelievable. Does it make them the greatest team of all time? I don't know about that overall. Probably not. They never trailed in the fourth quarter. They won the national championship. That's good enough. They're in the conversation. Virtually impossible to enumerate best ever, second best, third, fourth, whatever the case may be. Impossible in my mind to do that. Just like it's impossible to grade players from one era to another. You grade the players that are in each cycle, draft cycle, recruiting cycle, and so forth, and you try from comparative measures to look at how certain players or teams translate. This is an all-time effort. It is a season that is unlikely to be duplicated in its magical ways, if you will. And it's not magic. It's hard work. It's good people doing a really good job and it all coming together. And I think it's the lesson that you want to put forth and doing a lot of clinics and working with teams is that you always need to continue to grow as a coach, as a player. And if you constantly have that approach, that what can we do to get better? What can we do to get our team better, players better? This is what can happen. There was a lot of searching and a lot of, you know, trying to find answers, and every coach does it. Everybody tries to do things to make themselves better, and it doesn't always work. They get criticized, sometimes get fired because it doesn't work. It's our profession. But you got to keep trying. And I don't think there's any better example of this than Ed Orgeron, what he did, somebody that I've known for a long time, somebody that I thought for a long time really his lot was as a recruiter and as a position coach, a D-line coach. And that where his lot in life was. And you know what? It was that way for a while. But here's the thing. When you get a job at Ole Miss and you learn through trial and error and it doesn't work and you're willing to learn and willing to grow, oh, people will throw out, oh, he can't be successful at LSU because he wasn't at Ole Miss. Well, that's true and that's false in the same sentence. Because if you do the same things that you did and it didn't work and you continue to do it, you know the old saying, if you keep doing what you've been doing, you're going to keep getting what you've been getting. And Sanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. He understood that. Not everybody does. You can allow yourself to be defined by a moment, by a season, by a coaching tenure, or you can learn from it. And this is about Ed. It's about a program, and it's about an opportunity, and it's about circumstances and timing. You know, and all not to be overly philosophical, but when opportunity comes along, step through it, take advantage of it, because you may not get that one ever again. And he did it. So he would not be defined by what he did at Ole Miss. And you would be right if you said, you know what, he wasn't good at Ole Miss. That's not going to work. This is not the answer. Oh, everybody now is saying, oh, USC should have hired him. You know what? Nobody, all the people that are criticizing USC now, those are the same people that are saying, oh, you can't hire Ed. He's not the guy. Oh, they're all coming out of the woodwork now. Oh, yeah, I said they should have hired him. It's funny because the noise is a lot louder now than it was then. The reality is they made a mistake. But a lot of people were on board with that quote-unquote mistake. They didn't see it as a mistake. Then they see it as a mistake now. Revisionist history. Okay? It's just the way it is. So what is this really coming down to? It comes down to continuing to improve and having the resources. You know, if you're in a position to step in a position where you are the head coach and you have the resources to put a plan in place, you have the vision, you have the support, you can do great things. Didn't have that, nor did not have the resources or the understanding of how to do it in his first time out. He learned. That's true genius. Now, Ed is not a football savant. He's not a great X's and O guy. Neither is Dabo Swinney, the other participant in the championship game. But they're really good at relating to people. They're really good at recruiting, selling the program, and putting the right people in place. Now, I have a little bit of a blind spot, or how do you say it? Blind spot's the best way. When I look at coaches, and my background in coaching is more of just that in the background, the film work, player evaluation, schematics. Those are the things that have been my strength. I tend to gravitate and hold those people in a little bit more respect than the others. But it just goes to show you that there are different ways to do it. And I always say that when you're hiring a coach, when you are a coach and you need to put things in place on your staff, it's important to understand all the things that you need and understand what people can do to help you and maybe what are things that are not in their control. And it is fine, and we'll address this in a question in a little bit, you tend to hire people that you know, that you trust, but maybe they're good in one setting, in one fit, in a certain responsibilities, and not as good as others. Making sure that you understand that and evaluate that correctly is pivotal. And so if you don't have that skill, you need to replace it. We had a couple of guys, one in particular that were placed in the Hall of Fame this weekend is the coach Jimmy Johnson. Not a great X's and O guy. Great evaluator of talent. Again, a great leader. A lot of guys fall into that category. And I recognize and respect Jimmy and Ed and all those people. I just always talk about that there's a difference. There's difference. Worked under Belichick, you know, a strategic genius, and, you know, he can touch other things. Been around Saban, and he's, again, more of a strategic guy. And it's okay. You can be a great offensive guy, great defensive guy. You know, you can see the game from a different viewpoint. You can be a personnel guy and be a recruiting guy. You can do a lot of things that can come to the table. You just need to fix yourself surrounded with a staff of people that can augment what you do, help raise up things that you're not as good at, and make sure that you got all bases covered. So, hail to them. Great job. And congrats. By the way, congrats to Bill Cowher also, in addition to Jimmy Johnson. I, again, think they're different types of greatness. We tend to focus on the results. I get the importance of results, folks. It's a results-oriented business. But results come in different forms. For example, I think Cowher and certainly Jimmy Johnson is deserving. I know John Madden got in as a coach. I think John Madden was a good coach. I don't think he was a Hall of Fame football coach. But he was, you know, I think he deserved to be in as a contributor with the whole game that's got his name on it and an announcer. But he got in as a coach because of his stardom being on TV. And what I mean by that is, I'm not saying he's not deserving. I'm happy for him. But I think there are other people that are better coaches. This, you can't even, to football people, you can't even compare the job that Don Coryell and what he meant to football compared to John Madden. Don Coryell is a savant of the passing game. And the lineage of great coaches that have come down from what he put forth and what he put meant to the passing game, that alone, people don't understand that. Didn't go to a Super Bowl, didn't win. Madden did a good job, and I'm fine with John Madden getting in as a coach. Did win, you know, a Super Bowl, and certainly did his role. And he does fit the mold of not a great X's and O guy as a leader. There again, maybe my bias coming in there, but it's also a byproduct, I think, of popularity and understanding or lack thereof about what truly constitutes greatness. So I'd say congrats to those that are in, but let's get the Tom Floreses, let's get Don Coryells inducted in the Hall of Fame sooner. Also want to address something that I never thought I would be addressing. Don't really care to address it, but a couple of people have asked me, and it's one of the questions, so I'll address it. And you know, in the excitement of the LSU National Championship, you know, we see more and more players who are proud of their schools, that want to maybe be a part of the celebration. But we are, more importantly, having folks that are in the look at me world. It's all about me. As LSU won the national championship, everybody's been talking. I don't think it's kind of foolish, but the whole Odell Beckham giving money to players, it's real money, it's fake money, it's real money. He ended up somehow in the locker room, interrupted Ed Orgeron as he's talking to the team, not in a disrespectful way, but injecting his, you know, bravado and excitement, totally inappropriate. Should not be in that locker room. That's maybe a part of just Ed wanting to embrace former players. But this is where saw Booger McFarland on the sidelines, running up and down, standing in, almost on the field. Couple of, you know, staff members at LSU said they had to move him around. You know, it's not about you guys. And with Odell is a narcissist. Look at me. And there's nothing that he did that's really that bad. He put his hand on a cop, slapped the rear end of a cop in a locker room. You don't put your hand on a policeman. I don't care what the situation is. Okay, you don't. It was it done with malice? I don't think so. It was done out of excitement, reaction. I mean, you don't even go grab the policeman and hug him. I mean, you just don't do that. But I can understand how the excitement you can get over. But there again, it's not about you. The people that were responsible ex-players are not you. They're the current team, the current staff. And I think what we're seeing today, even in the announcing world, ex-player world, that it's their school and it's me. It's, again, it's not about you. It's not, okay? And I think what it's unfortunate about it, here's the only thing that I think is really relevant to this. It's taking time away for the folks at LSU that have got to send out PR releases about this and that, what didn't happen, what did happen. Send in a letter, formality, you got to do it, to the SEC office and the NCAA office about what happened. We're looking into it. We're investigating it. All distracting away from what's really relevant. Now, it's not taking away from the title, but it is now headline story, bottom line news runner information, Odell Beckham, warrant for his arrest, which, look, I'm not a criminal justice person, and I'm not here to judge whether what you see is warranted for an arrest. But the fact that it's even a discussion tells you what poor judgment some of these guys have, and it does open up the window of why Odell has been woefully inadequate as a teammate, and while gifted as a player, has underachieved from a productivity level. More, you know, there are a lot of ex-players at that game. A lot of them conducted themselves correctly. And, you know, just for a moment, mention Booger McFarland was elected an honorary captain because he's a former player there. So it's great that he's there. But again, understand the excitement. Respect the fact that you're invited to be there. You haven't earned your way. You're not obligated to be there. And I just think that the behavior, how some of these things take place on the sideline, getting a bit out of hand, and then certainly in the case of after the game, Odell doing something foolish that clearly was trying to get himself attention, throwing money wide. He's doing that in front of a camera to be cute. Look at me. Look at what I'm doing. Again, foolish and ridiculous. So it's really all I have to say about it. And that's all about Odell and really has nothing to do with LSU. And it's other than it's being an embarrassment. And probably if the NCAA doesn't do it, Odell is the LSU is going to have to distance themselves from having a guy like that on the sidelines again, and maybe would ruin it from some other guys that would know how to conduct themselves. You know, you see this time. Shaq has been on the field a few times and been, particularly at home games, have been honored at LSU games. You know, but he never. He plays it up himself, and he does that whole thing. It's kind of hard to not notice him, but he doesn't kind of interject himself in the game and start, giving the officials the business. Which, you know, I can tell you this: an ex-player on the sidelines running down, you know, simulating throwing a flag to the official gets a sideline warning or get a penalty. Because somebody that's an expert on the sidelines, they're going to have hell to play. It's not the end of the world. It's not meant to be malicious. It's just, again, a whole look at me. I'm there. See me. I'm on the sidelines. I'm on the field. I'm this. Odell Beckham had to be taken off a ladder. He climbed the ladder that the, you know, the band director, conductor guy, our gal, it just again, It's not your place. This is for the people that actually earned it, did it, deserve the credit. So let's move on. In the process of getting ready for the conference championship game, a lot is going to be mentioned about the two head coaches in the NFC championship game. Matt LaFleur, Kyle Shanahan, both proteges of Mike Shanahan, obviously Kyle's dad, but Matt has certainly come and learned from the the Mike Shanahan background. I was asked in Atlanta radio recently about the fact that Matt LaFleur and Kyle Shanahan were on the Falcons staff, and they moved on and become obviously great success. LSU loses their offensive coordinator, Joe Brady, their passing game coordinator, to be the offensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers. So one of the things I was asked to address is the importance of putting together a staff and understanding what you have on a staff and recognize it. Look, because a guy several years down the road goes on to be a good head coach, a good coordinator, whatever it is, doesn't mean that he was ready to be that when you had him on your staff. However, just like I always try to drill down into folks, you can't look at the finished product of the player. You have to look at the skill set, the rate of ability to improve, and have a vision of what that player can be down the road. You have to understand that. And that's why you have so many players go on to a different place and become successful, because the place that he came from, well, didn't have a place for him because they didn't have the vision for him that some other team did. Letting a player out of your building that can be a good player because you didn't recognize what he could be because he wasn't that at that time is a poor job of evaluating what you have. From a coaching standpoint, if you have good young guys on your staff, and let me explain what good young, it's not about what they know, but it's about their work ethic, their passion, because if you don't have great passion, your work ethic is not going to be suitable enough to be successful enough. And your willingness to learn and your desire to learn and your capability of learning. If you have those things, you want to make sure you keep those guys in the building. Now, maybe, pardon me, you can't, because maybe they get a fantastic opportunity. Maybe you've got, in the case of Joe Brady, I mean, LSU's got a position for him, but if he wants to be in the NFL, there's nothing you can do about that. If you've got a Matt LaFleur in your building and you're the Atlanta Falcons, and he gets offered an offensive coordinator job, and you got a Kyle Shanahan, well, you know, you can't give him what you can't make them both happy, and you've got one that's a little bit more experienced than the other. That's how it goes. But you've got to find a way. If you have someone, even an underling, you make sure you keep them. You advance them. Give them more money. You give them more responsibility. Hell, you don't have a salary cap for coaches. And I always say that there needs to be more of a living wage to these young up-and-coming coaches, because it's a way to keep them around a little bit. And then maybe in a year you can advance them. There are different ways that you can do things. You can have a offensive coordinator, but you can have someone with a, whether it's a title or not, to be essentially a pass game coordinator or a run game coordinator or a sub-package coach, a nickel offensive coach, a nickel defensive coach that just coaches certain packages, that oversees that. Give them more responsibility internally that are good preparation for them to take the next steps, because maybe your coordinator is going to go get a head coaching job, or maybe that guy that you have underneath may end up being better and you may want to make a move and promote from within. You've got to have that vision for that. So it's important in identifying coaches on your staff that are really good. The ones that are maybe, and this is where sometimes people get confused too. Sometimes you get personality conflicts. Sometimes you have a good young guy that's capable, but his attitude is not as good because maybe there's something between the personality of his superior and him that doesn't quite work. He goes somewhere else and he flourishes, but it's not necessarily your fault because he didn't handle himself as professionally as he needed to. And then he went in a different environment and he either figured it out that, hey, if I don't learn how to improve my people skills, I'm not going to advance, regardless how smart I am. Or maybe he gets in a better environment where he's treated better. Those things happen. But it's important to identify what you have in your organization from a coaching standpoint, from a scouting standpoint, from an administrative standpoint. Bright guy that really understands economics and, you know, learn at the foot of being an intern or the salary cap guy, learning different things, working on different projects. That's someone that might be your future capologist. It's what I've always believed. It's what Bill Belichick always did. Hire good people. Hire smart people. Hire great workers. I don't want an intern to come in with the idea that, oh, he's got all these answers. If I got to get an intern to give me the answers, something wrong with me. It's something wrong with my staff. I want the intern to come in and learn, get an understanding of what we're doing and how we do it. And then if they have some ideas to share, then that's when they grow, they become more and more involved, and then that's when you know where you got something. This is why, for example, people who train and let guys grow up within an organization, Bill Belichick, for example, how often do you see Bill Belichick fire coaches? He rarely has to, does he? Some guys move on, promoted, but he's always got somebody that he promotes from within. He'll usually add maybe somebody from the outside to kind of have be a part, but it's usually somebody that's very familiar with him and how he does things. Okay? Very successful. Yet you look at other organizations, they're changing 6 to 8 coaches every year, bringing in new people, psyching them in and out. Just like you don't win in football with an all-star cast of players, fantasy football players, you win with a team that's well-constructed. Your coaching staff is not always with this guy and they, oh, man, this is the dream staff make. This guy, your coordinator here, that would be a disaster. Too many egos. Too many people doing their own thing. Having the right mix of people with the same vision that are bright, that can grow together, is where you want to go. Understanding that, coaching staff, front office, scouting, training staff, video staff, that's all important to understand. I think that is key. Conference championship games are always interesting. And obviously outside of the Super Bowl, they're the next biggest games because it's the game that puts you into the Super Bowl. And it's always interesting because your organization, your non-football folks, your operations people that handle travel and media relations and tickets and things of that nature, they have to prepare quietly without discussing it or throwing it out there. They have to prepare for the trip to the Super Bowl right now. Now, the league basically sets aside everything. The rental car agencies, the hotels, the ticket allotments, that's all set. The league sets it. It's just, you know, regardless who the AFC representative or NFC representative is, it's all set for you. It's kind of like cookie cutter, but you still need to do your work if you get there. And what you're going to need and how much you're going to need, all that kind of stuff. You need to do a lot of that. None of that is in play for football people. Now, you're very aware that the only thing where people are looking ahead on the football side is the advanced scouts. And I'm not talking about your college scouts where you're looking at, you know, for the future and next year. Those things are, you know, ongoing, of course. But your advanced scouting, You've got to prepare. We talked about getting prepared for the playoffs. You've got to be prepared for any scenario who you're going to play. Well, I can tell you that as the game plan is being put to bed and the touches are put on practices, the quality control guys, the analysts on the staffs of the Titans, the Chiefs, the Packers, and the Niners are already working on the two teams in the other conference. So the Niners are preparing for the Titans and the Chiefs. The Chiefs are preparing for the Packers and the Niners and so on and so forth. The film breakdowns. You're getting as much film breakdown and much input of your film breakdowns into the computer. You get it all done so that the only thing you have to do to begin preparation for the Super Bowl in terms of studying your opponent is to take the game Sunday. So you take that game and obviously you break it down after it's played and you add that to the mix, then you're off and running with your preparation. And it's important to understand the winners Sunday. Focus is going to be going on the Super Bowl. And I get it. It's 2 weeks. A lot of time. But what must be done is you must get together on Monday, the winner, and you will have a meeting. No doubt, you come in for the meeting. And at that meeting, most of it is going to be operations oriented. Okay, folks, here's the list. Here's the information. Here's where we're staying at the hotel. Here's what we got in terms of rental cars. Here's your ticket allotment. You need to check this up. Everybody's going to have a form to check who's coming and all that. You say, guys, you got 24 hours. You got to tomorrow morning to get this figured out or give it to someone in your family, a wife, a sister, a brother, a father, a mother, an aunt, an uncle, an agent. Get someone to handle it for you. Because tomorrow morning, we begin to focus 100% on the opponent. It's now no longer the Super Bowl. It's a football game. And other people will handle the tickets, the hotel rooms. This is what you got. They'll handle it for you. You got to be prepared for that. And then go forward and prepare the game plan at your facility this coming week. And when you leave, which will be like Saturday and or Sunday of next week, the game plan will be in. You go on site, and all you're doing is polishing the game plan because there's a lot of distractions that week. You get in, you got a media day. You got, you know, walkthroughs. The practice is fine-tuning, but the whole game plan of what you want to do, how you want to do it, is pretty much put in, and then you begin to polish it. Take certain things out, maybe add a thing here or there. But you need to be prepared for that. And quietly, a head coach will have on his staff somebody that will have all the schedule lined up as if you win. Because you don't win, it's there anyway, you can file it. But you have your schedule ready to go. So that immediately after the game in the locker room, you talk about, we're meeting tomorrow at 1 o'clock. This is what we're going to talk about. You know, so if you're at home and you win, you know, they go home and you come back here tomorrow. If you're getting on a plane to go, hey, home, and you want, hey, when we get home, we're meeting tomorrow, 1 o'clock, yada, yada, yada. It's a little bit different than all things in, obviously. It's the last game, and so all hands are on deck. You need to be prepared. The preparation for the game itself this weekend is obviously pretty normalized. You've prepared for the different option teams that you could play. You obviously have known since last week who you're going to play, and you move forward with it like any other game. There is sometimes a sense of it's a bigger game and a more important game. It is. You can't hide from that. But you have to normalize the game as much as possible because when it really comes down to it, it's about blocking, tackling, and executing correctly. I've mentioned that it's ironically, and I haven't really thought about it, but it's the 100-year anniversary of the NFL, not the 100-year anniversary of the Super Bowl. But the first Super Bowl was the Packers and the Chiefs. We still got that as a possibility. I don't know that I've seen a organization, a team, have a clearer path to the Super Bowl made by someone else other than them than the Chiefs have. And what an opportunity. It almost seems like it's their year with their unusual performance last week and how they were able to come back from a awful collapse and turn around a Chiefs collapse. Going to finish it off with a couple of questions that kind of go along of what we talked about. Kevin asks, now that college programs and NFL organizations are well into the process of firing or hiring head coaches, I hear a lot of statements like he wants to hire this guy for his staff because he worked with him before in another staff. In your judgment, what is the optimal hiring protocol and process that will ensure the best candidates is hired compared to someone you're comfortable with due to prior shared experiences? Well, I've addressed some of that. But, Kevin, the reason why you want to hire someone that you've worked with is because you've worked with them and you know they're good. You know what they're like. You know their personality. You know how they're going to respond under pressure. And if they've been good and they've been successful, you make note mentally and otherwise that you want that guy on your staff. You want him to be your coordinator, your position coach, your whatever. That's why you do it. That's no different than any job and any line of work you're in. Now, I have had coaches who they have good buddies. The guys are really close to them. And those their good buddies are not as good as they think they are. So there's a little bit of a blind spot in terms of, boy, he thinks he's, you know, really, really good at this, and he's not. You have to make sure of that. You have to, and that can be very difficult. There have been cases where coaches are, they're like, you know, brothers. Look, Bill Belichick got his son on his staff. Mike Shanahan at Kyle Shanahan. You know, I mean, do you really think that when a coach is hiring his son on his staff, he's hiring him because he's the best candidate he can get? We know they want somebody that they're trying to help their son. But it doesn't mean that that guy can't be real good, say Kyle Shanahan. So it's a great question. What you have to do is the best candidate. But the best candidate might be different than you think. I just said, oh, yeah, put that all-star candidate together. We want this great defense coordinator, this offensive coordinator. They may be two guys with great reputations would be a disaster together because of their personality or because of their style. You can't have a defensive coach that's physical, that's going to go up against a guy that has an offensive mindset that's going to be fast-paced. That's going to be oil and water. That'll never work. That'll never mix. The defensive guy is going to have to figure out how to play good situational defense and have to live with giving up 40 points a game if their offense is going to be at fast-paced. You have to know that. You can't hire the best defensive coach to work for Mike Leach because Mike Leach doesn't care about defense, and it's all about his offense. So you're not going to get the best guy. The best guy is not going to want to work for him. Now, he's not going to want to put that product on the field that's going to be doomed to fail because lack of personnel and the lack of focus on it, it's not going to work. So the best candidates are the ones that are the best fits of what you want to do, not some all-star fantasy coaching candidate like you put all-star player candidates together that really don't fit, that don't fit the scheme and the philosophy. So you want to have the right fits. Good teachers, good learners, because good teachers are usually good learners, and you want to have them that work well together and have a shared vision. And that's what you're looking for putting together your best staff. And normally, the safest way is, I'm going to hire somebody that I know is good, and how do I know they're good? Because I've worked with them, and they've done it before. That's why you have so many people bring people they're familiar with. Because you know they're good because you've been there with them. But you got to know they're good and not just your buddy. There's a difference, okay? And you got to be careful with, this guy's got a great reputation. He was great with us, but now he's older and his energy level's not the same. Well, that guy who's got great vision, great experience, may not be the greatest teacher now in the latter stages of his career. You got to know that. You got to know it because you've got to really dig down deep into what he's been doing recently and how he's been doing it. So that's how I handle that. Richard asks, where do you see Jacob Eason, the quarterback out of Washington, at the next level? He's a project. A lot of physical skills, not a lot of playing time. He's got a lot of work, a lot of mechanical work, but he does have a strong arm. What was your scouting evaluation of Luke Kuechly out of Boston College? Very high grade on him. I recommended at Carolina. It was him and Fletcher Cox. I thought Fletcher on the defensive line would have been the direction I would have gone. Thought the Panthers made the right choice. Fletcher Cox been a Pro Bowl player and a great player in his own right. Luke Kuechly's just been outstanding. Every bit as good as I thought. He was dominant at Boston College, and he was dominant in the NFL. Reggie White out of Tennessee, where Reggie was extraordinary. So we're talking about high first-round grades on both of them. Brett Favre, the biggest thing on Brett Favre, those of us that saw him in his junior year really liked him. Most people were down on him. The reason why he went to the second round is because he had the car accident, and he didn't do nearly as much in his senior year. And so that's where people kind of missed on him. But he was a gunslinger. He turned out to be a gunslinger. He wasn't the guy that processed information the very best. That concerned me. I thought Mike Holmgren, and I still think Mike Holmgren doesn't get enough credit for the job that he did for kind of honing his skills and allowing him to simplify the reads for him and help him out, because a lot of times he just, you know, makes the old, oh, no, 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 oh, man, he got away with it type throw. He got by on physical skills more than his cerebral approach to the game. One of the rare guys to do that, but that's kind of how I saw him coming up. Richard also asked, the Houston Astros got caught with stealing signs using electronic devices. Is this similar to what the Patriots did with Spygate or much worse than that? I'm not as familiar with what the Astros did. I know they use electronic devices. I don't know as much about it, so comparing it's kind of difficult for me. But here's the end. You can't use electronic devices. See, as an advanced scout, which I've done a lot of times in my career, quote-unquote stealing signs, well, that's what you're supposed to do. You want to get a feel for what they're doing and why they're doing it and anticipate that when they bring in this personnel grouping, when they line up this way, this is what they're going to do. And a lot of it you can pick up to some degree with certain signs, what it means, and you figure that out. That's what you're supposed to do. But if I take a camera and shoot it and then take the film back and marry it up, that's cheating. That's something that the opponent's not doing. And that is taking away a skill, and I'm just cheating, and that's not right. That's not ethical, and you don't do that. But if I do a better job of seeing it and understanding it, it's no different than breaking down film and gauging what a team does and trying to figure out how to best combat it. So it's the illegal use of electronics. Anything that you do illegally, you're allowed to scout an opponent. Obviously, you exchange film. Everybody go and do the best job of preparing, and may the best team, organization, coaches, players win. But when you do something illegal, that's not right. Is the Patriots things worse or better than the Astros? I don't know enough about the Astros situation. It sounds like the Astros situation is worse, but maybe I'm basing it on the fact that they're firing everybody. I do think that maybe baseball, it's a little bit more frowned upon, but I'm sorry, I just don't know enough about the minutiae of what went on completely in the Astros situation, other than what you read about. The Patriots situation, the video, and the whole Jet situation, that was, you know, obviously something that shouldn't have been done. Now, you're talking about possibly if that would have happened in an organization that was not successful, that was not winning, it could have cost maybe a coach's job, particularly if a coach, in fact, it might have encouraged an owner to say, I'm going to fire my guy, and I can fire him with cause. And it might be a good way to dump a coach that you might have been willing to move on from him a year from now anyway. But in the case of Bill Belichick, you know that the league doesn't want to eliminate quite possibly the greatest coach it's ever had. And certainly Robert Kraft doesn't want to move on from Bill Belichick before he absolutely has to when Bill says, I've got enough. So it's interesting, and we probably will never know, but if somebody does something like the Patriots did, I don't want to throw out any names, but you know, somebody that is a coach that's on the hot seat, you know, pick somebody that's maybe on the verge of getting fired and they get caught doing something like that, might be treated a little bit different. So I think while I can't confirm the exact nature of what the Astros did, using electronic devices, anything like that is clearly stated, clearly illegal. You can't do it. You do it, you're going to have a different result. But I do think, and I from what I gather, and I know that the Red Sox manager was very well respected, very well liked, and I think very well thought of. They let him go. The Mets have let their manager go. So, you know, maybe it's more egregious, and maybe it's just something in baseball that's being pushed from the Major League Baseball offices. But again, while those managers are good and probably well liked, none of them rise to the success level of a Bill Belichick has in New England. So I do think it would be interesting if we had a litmus test of somebody doing something similar that is at a lesser success level and how that might have an effect in the college game. And I think we'd see that. I think we've seen that in college. We've seen certain coaches that maybe have had success, they get away with stuff. Other coaches that don't, unless it's an extremely embarrassing situation, sometimes get excused, it's pushed under the rug. We saw that with Bobby Knight for a long time at Indiana until it was probably towards the end where they had enough of him and he wasn't winning the titles as frequently, so all of a sudden it changed. You know, things like that, you know, took place. You kind of wonder, you know, Joe Paterno at the end of his career. I think there were a lot of folks that thought that probably it was time for Joe to move on, and the awful Jerry Sandusky situation. Clearly, the firing of Joe Paterno, it was clearly due to the Sandusky situation, but you wonder if they would have couched it a little bit differently and pushed the responsibilities a little bit more elsewhere if Joe Paterno was, say, 20 years younger and they were still competing for national championships on a regular basis. You wonder if they'd have made a different decision. I don't know. I speculate. I don't know. But interesting situation, interesting questions. Hey, appreciate you joining us. Got a real interesting matchup. Look, I am going with the Chiefs this weekend. I really think the Niners are going to win, but I'm kind of going on record and picking a Green Bay-Kansas City Super Bowl matchup. Guess that's the sentimental fool in with me. We'll see how it plays out. These games have been interesting. Last week's games not quite as exciting as wild card round. This has a chance, even though both home teams are about 7.5-point favorites, has a chance, in my mind, to be pretty close game. So let's enjoy it. Let's watch it. Let's reconvene next Thursday. Answer any of your questions. Send them to LandryFootball.com. Go to LandryFootball.com. Hit contact Chris, and I will address it right here. Appreciate you joining us. Talk to you again next time, everybody.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is an In the Trenches with Ian Beckles quick fix on Radio Influence.
Kansas City is an anomaly. Kansas City has so much firepower and they have probably the most talented quarterback that ever laced up, you know, cleats. Seriously, Mahomes is one of the most talented cats out there, period. So when you have that and you have all the firepower that they have, plus when you're down 24-0, there's not going to be a whole lot of running of the football. But what happens is you catch yourself in trouble down 24-0. And at that point, I still thought that Kansas City was going to win the football game. And also, people that don't think that special teams play a big part in football, that game, that Kansas City game, got turned around by a kickoff return by a rookie.
In the Trenches with Ian Beckles can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.